Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Are you a victim of the timeshare trap and think there's no way out? I'm Chuck McDowell, founder of Wesley Financial Group, and I'm here to tell you that there is a way out. I will send you a timeshare exit information kit absolutely free, explaining how the timeshare industry works and your options for cancellation.
Get the facts. For your free timeshare exit info kit, go to iCancelTimeshare.com. That's iCancelTimeshare.com. iCancelTimeshare.com.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Sometimes, I know, my kids right now are saying, Dad, technology, Dad. The mouse cursor disappeared. I was supposed to play the music, and I'm like, where is it? It's gone. So, anyway. Good morning, everybody. 9 minutes after 9 o'clock. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show with Marianne Hamilton is here today wearing pink.
Good morning, Andy. Yes, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. In fact, I have a little piece of news. This is Tammy Trujillo from NBC News Radio to start us off.
CDC Director Mandy Cohen explains its importance.
It's a time to honor survivors, remember loved ones, and educate ourselves about early detection.
Breast cancer is the second leading cause of death in the U.S. It's one of the most commonly diagnosed cancers in women, and it increases with age. About 83% of breast cancer diagnoses each year are among women aged 50 and older. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
All right. Thank you, Tammy. A couple of other numbers. I don't want to blow you away with all these numbers, but in 2024, approximately 310,000 women and 2,800 men will be diagnosed with invasive breast cancer. About 66%, two-thirds of breast cancer cases are diagnosed at a localized stage before cancer has spread outside of the breast. That's good news when it is easiest to treat. However, we need to remain hyper-vigilant because it's highly recoverable, as you would know, Marianne. If you do catch it early, if you let it go, if you don't detect it, or if it gets to stage 3 and 4, it's much more serious. In fact, stage 4 cancer often is deadly.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So yep. You're a breast cancer survivor.
I am indeed. As of May 11th at 3:12 in the afternoon, I am 4 years cancer free.
That is cool.
Yeah, and I'm actually the poster child for early detection and treatment. I would encourage all of your female listeners and those who love them, please, 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 if you haven't scheduled your annual mammogram, please do so. It takes a while sometimes here locally to get scheduled, so go ahead and make that phone call. And I don't know if you have any listeners who have never had a mammogram, but if you haven't, it's really not something that you should be afraid of. It's just,
right.
It's, you know, 5 seconds of kind of, they put your breast between two plates. And
I feel like they've come a long way. Like,
yes.
Like, I remember early in my marriage to my wife, her getting a mammogram, and it was kind of painful. It's kind of, she didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
She got one last year, and I was like, oh man, I was working. I'm like, didn't you want me there to hold your hand? She goes, it was number one, they wouldn't have let you back there.
Yeah, right.
And number two, it was no big deal.
It's not. It's basically 5 seconds, hold still, mm-hmm. and you're done. I mean, on each side. And, you know, you walk in, they give you a little gown to put on, and then they say, have you had implants? And I always say, well, if I did, I did get my money's worth, did I?
I was going to say, you think they'd be able to tell, usually, with certain people.
But they want to make sure. Yeah. And it's a pretty painless process, and you're in and out, and you get results really quickly, and it's always a load off your mind, for sure.
Do you mind, Marianne, telling us a little bit about the treatment for it? Maybe first of all, how and when you found out, and then what the process was like from that point forward.
Sure. So I had a cyst in my right breast I remember writing a newspaper column about it 10 years prior to my diagnosis.
Okay, so this was 14 years ago?
So diagnosis was 4 years ago, and then right.
Yeah.
And the column was basically about, you know, the terror that I felt each time I'd go in for a mammogram because mm-hmm. I'd have that, and they would do some whispering, and the technicians would come and go, oh, well, we're going to do an ultrasound. And they'd say, let's do another ultrasound, and 1 year then they brought the doctor in and did a third ultrasound. And he finally said, oh, don't worry, it's just a watery cyst. You'll be fine. We'll see you next year. And that was always the case. And I should I have had it aspirated, probably, but I just didn't do that. And he's, you know, he didn't see that there was any need to do that. But then in 2000, right when the world was closing down, actually
2020.
Yeah, 2020. I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. 2020. A couple of months prior, I had felt that the lump had gotten kind of hard and painful and,
ooh,
yeah, not good, not good. Yeah. So at the time, I did try to get in for a mammogram, but because of scheduling, they said, we can't accommodate you right away. And, oh, by the way, Medicare will only pay for one per year, and it hasn't been a year yet. So I had to wait 2 more months, which was kind of a bummer. Anyway.
I think I got a problem. Oh, yeah, you can wait.
You can wait.
Yeah, yeah, I hate that.
Should I have pushed? Yeah. Probably, but I didn't. So, and I was going through that first pageant stuff anyway, so that was kind of taking up a lot of my oxygen. Anyway, so I went in February of 2020, and same thing. Oh, well, have an ultrasound. Do an ultrasound. Oh, you know what? We're going to send you off for a biopsy. And that was, I think, on a Friday right before Valentine's Day. And then,
biopsy meaning they had to cut you open and take a sample of...
Yes.
That sounds painful and scary.
Well, they take you in, they numb up your breast, and you don't feel anything. But believe it or not, I remember actually laughing because the machine that they used to do the biopsy sounds very, very much like this device called an epilady that ladies use to remove hair on your upper lip or your legs or something.
Okay.
And I hear this thing go, and I started laughing, and they said, okay, we've never had anybody laugh during a biopsy. What's going on? I said, oh, it sounds like my epilady. And all the nurses just start howling. They said, it does. You know.
And all the guys are like, huh?
What is that?
Yeah.
Anyway, so then they, you know, you go off and wait, and then, the next week, I actually had a doctor's appointment. I was told it would take probably 5 to 6 working days. The next week, I went in for a doctor's appointment for something else, and he said, oh, do you want your results? And I went, well, no, you can't have them yet. And he goes, well, yeah, they're right here. Do you want them? And I
really?
Said, oh, yeah, sure. And he goes, are you sure? And I thought, oh, that's not good, you know.
That's how he said it?
That's how he
are
said it.
Are you sure?
Are you sure? I said, yeah. And so then he goes, okay, yeah, that has to come out. So anyway, long story short, that was February. I had the, I was scheduled for surgery.
So he said that has to come out.
That has to come out.
Did he say the C word, cancer word?
Oh, yes.
Word?
He said, so. I said, it's malignant. And he said, yeah, it's malignant. It has to come out. I said, okay. So
where was your husband at this point?
He wasn't there because I had gone in for something else that was completely unrelated to this. I had had this pre-scheduled appointment for quite a while. So Doug wasn't there. So I went out in the parking lot and called him, and I was, you know, having a meltdown and basically said, you know, it wasn't good news. And he said, I'll be home in 5 minutes. And we went home and talked about it. So anyway, then we were assigned what's called a nurse navigator, who are wonderful, wonderful people. They basically coordinate all of your medical appointments. They let you know what your procedure is going to be. They schedule you with everything. Basically, they're your first point of contact, and they're your cheerleader and your information provider. And
this is through the hospital, St. George Regional?
Yeah, St. George Regional. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a fantastic facility. And the really, really ironic thing was that, you know, I've been on the board of Art Around the Corner, the nonprofit that installs all the public art for several years.
Yeah.
And 8 months before, we'd gone and installed a piece of public art in front of the cancer center. So I'd been outside that building many, many, many times.
But never inside.
Never inside. Mm. And so we were scheduled for an appointment to meet the nurse navigator. And we pulled up and I saw, you know, cancer center in big giant letters on the side of the building. And I just lost it.
Wow. Yeah. It's got to be, you know, I mean, There are certain points in life, something happens, and you go, wow, this is real.
It was very, very real. It was very real. But amazingly enough, I saw that the sculpture was out in front, and I sort of, Doug has a picture of me. I went over and sort of, you know, hugged it, and I felt, okay, well, this is going to give me some good energy, and I went in. And then,
what was the sculpture, by the way?
Oh, it was called Ark of Peace. It's actually now in front of the Encircle House here in downtown St. George. It had some, it has an ark of birds, of this woman holding her hands up, and there's an ark of birds.
Oh, yeah.
It was a beautiful, beautiful piece, but I guess there was some feedback from some of the oncology nurses that they felt that it represented death. And so they were uncomfortable with it, so it went elsewhere. But it was then leased by Encircle House.
It was peaceful to you.
Peaceful to me, yes. That was very helpful. So anyway, went in and talked with a nurse navigator. She, and her name turned out to be Marianne, which I thought was, you know, pretty cosmic. She was just absolutely wonderful. Very, very soft-spoken, very calm, very just reassuring. She had prepared this binder full of information for me that had all my pathology reports and stuff. And so we walked through, and she could sort of tell how much I could process and process and how much I couldn't quite do. And Doug was taking notes, so that was really helpful. I would definitely advise anybody who's newly diagnosed with cancer for your first appointment, take somebody with you who can write things down, because you're not going to, you just can't.
The emotion.
You can't deal with that. It's just too much to take in. Anyway, so she was great, and she said, we'll schedule you with a surgeon, and then we'll go from there. I met with the surgeon a couple weeks later, and he said, oh, you know, we're going to do a lumpectomy, and you'll have some radiation, and boom, you'll be done. And I looked at him, and I said, no chemo? And he goes, oh, no, it's early stage. You're good. You know, you'll be fine. And I just about fainted, you know, with relief, because I had envisioned all this horrible, horrible stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So March, I had a lumpectomy, and that was not fun. It's an outpatient procedure. The only thing that was bad about it was that they gave me way, 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 way too much anesthesia. I said in the morning.
She's only 90 pounds. Come on.
I said to the anesthesiologist, you know, I'm kind of small. I really, really react drastically to drugs. Can you be careful? Oh, yeah, honey, don't worry. We'll take care of it. And it was, everything had just shut down because of COVID. And I think they just wanted to get me out of there as soon as possible. And I remember slumping over on top of the nurse as she's holding me up as they're giving me this anesthesia. And then I was really, really sick that night. But aside from that, there was no pain. It was totally fine. I was out walking on the trail in 24 hours with Doug. And totally fine. It gave me a month for that to heal. And then I started radiation. And that was in April and May. And my radiation oncologist felt that because I was pretty healthy, he would give me double doses of radiation.
Really?
Really, yeah.
That sounds like a bad idea, but it's just me.
I kind of went, what? He said, you know, you really won't feel anything different. You'll just be out of here in half the time. I said, well, okay. So I went every single day at 3 o'clock and the entire...
For how long?
For 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Yeah. And each Monday I'd have an appointment with him. He'd sort of give me an update and said I was doing great, tolerating it really well. And you do end up with the worst sunburn you can possibly imagine on that breast.
I hate those.
Yeah, it wasn't
very painful, huh?
But the cool thing was, after it peels, I had this really, really pretty breast and one old lady breast, so it was pretty funny.
they didn't match anymore.
They didn't quite match.
No.
And one of the many, many weird things about having radiation is that the hair under your arm doesn't grow anymore, so I don't have to shave under that armpit anymore.
Can you do the other side?
That's what I asked him, and he said, yeah, everybody asks that, but no. Yeah. So anyway.
Tell us about the radiation. I have a friend, a neighbor of mine that is undergoing some pretty heavy radiation treatments, and they give him all kinds of... He can't even sleep in the same bed with his wife for a while.
Oh, because he's so toxic.
Because of the radiation, No, so did you have to deal with any of that kind of stuff?
No. I mean, it was basically going... It's a freaky situation if you're a little bit claustrophobic. I found that having, you know, maybe 1 milligram of Valium helped with that because you're on this, you know, gurney and they get you all situated. You win actually a week before you start and you get the tattoos. They are temporary tattoos, 4 little dots around.
Really?
Yes, where they're going to aim the beam of the radiation treatment. Hmm. And those disappear over time. So they get you lined up. They cover you up with your little gown. Everybody, you know, beats feet out of the room because they don't want to get zapped themselves.
Right.
And then they spend, it takes literally one song. It's this sort of arm of a big
like
machine.
Like 4 minutes?
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. It takes longer to get undressed and dressed than it does for the radiation treatment.
Wow.
And Andy, as I live and breathe, I think I told you this, the first time they were going to radiate me, they said, okay, what kind of music do you like? And I said, classic rock and roll. And they said, cool, we've got that. They popped in a CD, and the first song that came up was Norman Greenbaum, When I Die, and they laid me to rest. I'm going to go to the place that's the best. And
you got a friend in Jesus.
Right.
That one, yeah.
That one. So I'm laughing, and they came in, and they said, okay, we don't see anybody laughing. I said, you know, that may not be the song you want to play for cancer patients undergoing radiation.
Oh, man.
And they went,
For you, it should have been more than a feeling, Boston, because
there
in that
go.
Song they say, I see my Marianne walking away. Yeah.
Good. So anyway, I did that every day for 15 days, and every day I went in because I figured I was running a marathon, and so I wore one of my running skirts every day, and I had little adhesive numbers on my forearm
really?
Showing how many treatments I had left. And I thought, I'm just going to make this as silly as possible because otherwise I'll go crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And at the end, on my last day, I went in with my sash and my crown and a sequin cocktail dress and my stiletto heels. And
really?
And I had a big cake for all the technicians who were just wonderful, by the way. They were fabulous. And it had the radioactive symbol on top, and we had a little party. And
radioactive cake, huh?
Radioactive cake. And I wanted to thank them all for the wonderful treatment I received. And then they have a gong that you get to bang when you finish.
Cancer-free.
Yeah. And then they give you a little certificate, you know, like a graduation certificate saying that you've completed. And they gave one to Doug, too, as being a wonderful caregiver, because he took me to every single doctor's appointment, every single radiation.
So you say every day for 3 weeks. Does that include Saturdays and Sundays?
No, just 5 days
a week. So 5 days a week. Okay.
Yeah. And so I basically had a schedule where I'd get up in the morning, you know, have a little breakfast, put on some running clothes, go on the trail, walk 4, 5, 8, whatever miles I could do, come home, get changed, showered, blah, 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 go have radiation. And then because things were kind of closed down, Doug would try and take me on some sort of outing, which was, there wasn't that much we could do, you know, go get chocolate or go to the park or something. And then that was how I got through it all. And we just watched, you know, silly stuff on TV because it was too scary watching the news and seeing what was happening with COVID everywhere. So
right.
I was really, really afraid. Every time he went to the grocery store, I was afraid he was going to come home and bring something and I'd get sick because I had compromised immune system.
Okay, so they told you that, though.
Yeah.
They said, listen, you're going to be susceptible. Mm-hmm.
Be careful.
Don't
be around crowds and stuff, yeah, which nobody was anyway. So
actually
my oncologist said, you know, if you're going to have cancer, this is a really good time to do it because you're around anybody anyway. Okay.
That's another
silver lining, yeah. So anyway, after 3 weeks, I was finished, and that was May 11th, and my doctor said, okay, you're good to go. And 2 weeks later, I walked a half marathon and celebrated, and it's been terrific ever since.
Now, my mother-in-law, sadly, she died from breast cancer, started it, but it went into other parts of her body. But she had a mastectomy instead of a lumpectomy. Mm-hmm. Did they talk to you about that, or was it always just going to be a lumpectomy?
You know, I asked if that would be indicated. Would that be a better idea? And they said, no, you know, really, you don't want that. It's so much more invasive, and the recovery is so much more difficult. Mm. So really, this is the best thing. And the cancer was very, very localized. They do, during the biopsy, they check your lymph nodes also.
If
any of those are involved, then of course, then they will do more radical surgery. But actually, I have a friend here in town who had a similar diagnosis, and she had actually had liver cancer a few years before. And so she was just like, take them off. And the doctor said, oh, no, same thing. No, we'll just take off the one. She said, no, take them both off. As it turns out, they did find cancerous cells on the other breast that had not been diagnosed. So she had both taken off and had reconstruction, and she's doing really, really well.
Again, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We're talking with Mary Ann, who, among a lot of things on her resume, is breast cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. Is one of those. She's wearing pink today to help remind us.
And one of the things that I love doing is that I'm a member of the Intermountain Health Patient Family Oncology Advisory Council.
Okay.
And so we get together once a month via Zoom and talk with healthcare providers and oncology nurses and social workers and such to sort of help them understand what it's like to have cancer, what kinds of treatments they should offer, what kinds of, not treatments medically, but what sort of resources they should offer, how can they present information that we can tolerate it and process it and that kind of thing. So,
a couple of things I wanted to do before we go to our first break, talk about the early detection part of it, and then also to talk about the spousal involvement, because I know a lot of our listeners are males. Who maybe their wives would have to go through this and how they can be supported. So number one, early detection. What are the best ways, just right off the top of the head, that you would advise that that women make sure they're okay?
It's, you know, it sounds really bizarre if you're not used to it, but, you know, self-examination is super important. If you feel something, say something, basically. If there's something that feels weird or it's sore or it feels sick or hard, that's a pretty good indicator you should have it checked out. And, you know, it may not be anything. Lots of lumps are totally benign, but it's really good to have it looked at and be sure that you keep up on your annual mammograms, especially after the age of 40.
Yeah, mammograms, again, are not scary. Mm-hmm. I haven't had one, so I'm not saying this by experience, but my wife has told me in her recent mammogram she's had the last few years, no big deal at all.
Really no big deal.
I was like, well, aren't they painful? She's like, not really.
It's just kind of like, it's a nuisance because they're basically squeezing your breast between two pieces of plastic.
Cold.
Yeah, cold metal. Cold. You don't warm them up. But aside from that, that's pretty much it. And you're in and you're out and it's fine.
Now, it's not foolproof, right, to the early examination, but it is, you know, I have a cousin that didn't work for her, and unfortunately they found it too late. But it is, I think, most oncology doctors will say, look, this is the best way to stop breast cancer is to catch it early.
Absolutely, and it's very treatable.
Yeah.
The 5-year cancer recovery rate, or, you know, life expectancy is basically 99% when it's localized.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
great.
Awesome. Talk about, you mentioned Doug a couple of times, your husband, and how supportive he was, and a great example of how a spouse should be. But what do you think the expectations should be with a woman from her spouse or her significant other when she's going through this? What should we be doing? Because I know a lot of times we feel kind of helpless. I want to do something, but I can't do any.
Men, you know, want to fix stuff.
Always, yeah, exactly.
You don't have the tools in your toolbox to make that happen.
Not on that one.
Not on that one. No. The hardest thing is, I think, watching somebody you love, of course, you know, knowing that there's a potentially life-threatening thing mm-hmm. happening. Mm-hmm. And so I think, first of all, being willing to listen and not saying, oh, you'll be fine, honey, don't worry about it. Being willing to listen to whatever your partner's concerns are. And saying, hey, this could kill me, or this could be really icky. Will you be there for me? And then pledging that support. And especially, you know, women's femininity and our sense of self quite often is tied up in our breasts. Those are, you know, one of our primary sources of attraction for the opposite sex. And so to have that compromised in some way or even removed is really, really kind of, you know, it's terrifying and upsetting. So I think the idea of your partner saying, I don't care, you're still beautiful to me, you know, whatever happens, you're the person I love. That's what Doug told me when I had this nice, you know, big gash in my breast and was feeling pretty awful. He was like, I don't care. He also looked at the scar and said, you know, I love that because now you're healthy and, you know, it means I have
That's
you
awesome.
For more years. You know.
Talk about strength a little bit. You mentioned a couple times you had what you called meltdowns.
No, sure.
When you get to a meltdown moment, you need somebody not to fix the problem, mm-hmm. like we were talking about, but somebody to be strong for you, right?
Listen, yeah. I had two female friends, in town who were really, really helpful to me. They were sort of my mentors to guide me through the process. I basically tried to do my crying in the shower, and I just wanted
tears
to
wash away easier that
that's
way,
right?
That's
right. And I wanted to maybe present a more positive face to, you know, to the community. I think, you know, I made a real conscious decision at the beginning when I was diagnosed to go public with it. I know that there are people who choose to be private and I totally respect that. Mm-hmm. But since Doug and I sort of have some visibility in the community, I thought, you know, if I disappear or just, you know, don't talk about this, there's going to be a lot of conjecture. I wanted to control the narrative myself. And so I made an announcement on Facebook and I said, please, please, please don't say, oh, I'm so sorry, or, you know, I'm, you know, my husband's daughter's, whatever, dog catcher's wife, you know, died of breast cancer. I don't need that, you know. I want just really positive reinforcement, and please don't send anything except rude jokes and encouragement. And that's pretty much what people did. It was great.
It's an awkward situation. And if, you know, if you've been around as long as you and I, you come across people and maybe they've lost a loved one mm-hmm. or there'd been cancer in their life or whatever it may be. And we sometimes we're terrible at being human because we don't know what to say. And so
we just
spit something out and that's the last thing they wanted to hear. And
I was really kind of surprised that a couple of people wrote back on Facebook. Excuse me. Oh, my husband had radiation and he got so sick. I hope you're okay. And why would you tell me that?
Yeah, I don't want to hear that.
I'm terrified enough as it is going into this whole adventure. And please, so there are a couple of people I gave myself permission to block and not not respond to.
So if you were blocked by Marianne 4 years ago, think about it, okay? Marianne, I got to get a weather and commercial break in
Absolutely.
Here. But it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Today is October 1st, and we just want to let people know that, you know, you don't have to.
October 2nd?
What's
is October 2nd?
Today's the first.
It's the first.
It's the first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, today is the first, yeah.
I thought that it was the second. God, I'm yeah, really so, myself.
Yeah, today is the first. And in fact, Marianne, here's a fun fact for you. I've been talking about this, but if we hit 100 degrees today, and that the forecast says we will, it'll be the first time in history that anywhere in the state of Utah has been 100 degrees in October. Yeah. Not necessarily something we want.
And not something so good for the marathon this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot one. All right, we'll be right back. Let's check weather.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, lots to talk about because there's lots going on in the month of October. Just tonight, today, 4 baseball playoff games. Tonight, the vice presidential debate. Saturday is the St. George Marathon. I guess it's marathon week, but I mean, it is one, the race is one day, but we do a whole bunch of stuff leading up to the marathon. And Marianne, you were telling me they still need help. They need people to come out and help out in the marathon.
Absolutely. There's always room for people to hand out refreshments and water and things at the aid stations, hand out medals at the end. There's just a lot of opportunities. Help with packet pickup on Friday during the expo. Lots of things you can do. So they're very, very eager to have people sign up, which you can do online for sure. If you just go to
SG Marathon.
SG Marathon, yeah.
It'll come up. .com. And,
.com.
So who was telling me this? Maybe it was Mayor Randall. Anyway, that St. George experienced a little bit of volunteer burnout for a little while just because we had a whole bunch of events in short succession, and we kind of had some volunteer burnout. We're hoping people are mostly recovered from that and are ready to volunteer at the marathon. If you, I go and do radio in the morning as a volunteer. I mean, I'm not handing out medals or water, but I'm
it's
on the
cool
radio.
For you to be there, yeah.
Yeah, it's a neat thing. In fact, hopefully you'll join me for some of it.
Yep.
On Saturday morning, bright and early here on KDXU. But yeah, they need whatever help you can offer. Even if you say you have an hour that you can give or whatever, they'll take it. They love to have your help. So
yeah, and that's one of the things that brings people back to this marathon over and over again every year is the caliber and the kindness of our volunteers. So, you know, please, if you have some time to spend and you're up for it, think about volunteering. That'd be great.
We have a local hero, Aaron Mettler.
Yes.
Who has won it, four times?
Four times, yes.
Four times. So hopefully, now I guess there's some folks that are pretty darn good in this year's race. And the scuttlebutt on the street was there's a couple of guys whose projected finish time is faster than Aaron's ever run.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's got his work cut out for him this year.
And he is, you know, those guys are in their 20s, and he's not.
He's not in his 20s anymore, right.
But, he, you know, he trains all year round. He runs close to 20 miles a day.
Wow.
Except on Sunday.
A day,
yeah. Ooh. And it doesn't matter if it's 112 outside. He's out. He loves the heat because he has about, you know, 0.9% body fat.
Yeah,
he's tiny. And he loves it. So it's just his life.
There's also the Mayor's Walk the morning of the marathon, and that's sponsored by the Exchange Club, I think, Jimmy Keston and those guys. And there's scones at the end
of
the Mayor's
for
Walk.
All, for all registered participants. Actually, Doug puts on that race, and so I'm going to go help him with that.
And it's not hard, folks.
It's a one-mile walk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get to cross the finish line and have that marathon experience at the end, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. So the Mayor's Walk, and again, I've been so impressed over the years of the fans, the people that come and line the streets and cheer on the runners.
Yeah.
They don't have to do that, you know. And that's a form of volunteering too, just being there and cheering them on and making. My brother has run 10 of those St. George marathons, and he has told me time and again. He said, the lift you get from the crowd on the final stretch, he says, you just want to quit. Your body is like done.
Dead.
And he says, the lift that you get from people just cheering you on, they don't know you, but they want you to finish. They want to help you get across that line. He says, it's an amazing thing.
It is. I mean, and that happens pretty much every race here in St. George. It's just, I always feel like, wow, I'm an Olympian coming across the finish line and I've just done this stupid time. But, you know, people here are so supportive of the athletes. It's terrific.
Very cool.
And so, I think that's one of the reasons why it's rated, you know, one of the four marathons to build a vacation around. Runner's World recognized them as that. And then it's actually Utah's largest marathon, and it's the 13th largest in the U.S.
Very cool. St. George Marathon is Saturday.
48th running of it.
48 of them. Mm-hmm. And now we've lost Debbie Zocco, but she had run every one of them for, what, 45, 40, 6, something like that?
Something like that, yeah, 45, yeah. I think.
So, yeah, folks, if you can get involved, like I said, I'll be there. Come by and say hi, wave at me. I guess you can't just come by, say hi, because we're kind of in a closed-off area. But, you know, we'll be talking to you on the radio and giving you updates throughout the first couple of hours of the St. George Marathon. All right, we also have, I want to mention, in about 30 minutes from right now, you are going to get stabbed.
I'm getting a four-pole this morning, yes.
A four-pole,
yes.
Not a double or a triple, no, but a four-pole.
This, I did this last year, and it was a really efficient way of getting all my shots. I'm getting my flu, my RSV, my pneumonia, and I don't want your listeners to freak out, but I'm getting my COVID booster also.
Well, that's... yeah, so... I guess they're all going to be the same arm, or do they switch arms halfway?
Both arms. And, you know, I thought, oh, God, I could get really sick, and I had absolutely zero side effects last year. Mm. My arms were real sore, both of them. Yeah. But if you just sort of rub them and keep moving, you can lessen that.
I had Stockton and I got the flu shot last week on the air.
The shootout, yes.
And that was nice. The health department sent a nurse by. I think her name was Mandy. Is that right, Stockton? Mandy? Mindy? Anyway, we sent a nurse by and stabbed me nice and good.
Uh-huh.
And I got a little Band-Aid and actually was disarmed. But,
did you have a Disney Princess Band-Aid or something?
No, it might. This year, I didn't even get Pluto or Mickey or anything. It was just a plain old brown Band-Aid.
Bummer.
But we'll let them save the cute ones for the kids.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And we, you know, I'm a supporter of vaccines and you know, getting that flu shot and... even, you know, the backlash with the COVID-19, did it work? Is it causing other things? Whatever, you could get into that. But unfortunately, some of the backlash has been people aren't getting the vaccines
of anything, yeah,
that are flat out obviously saving lives. And right, that's one of the things Dr. Blodge, when he comes on tomorrow, he's always talks about. He's like, you know, we cured things like, you know, tetanus and polio. And those were pretty much eradicated from the earth.
Measles.
And then people came along and said, I'm not getting any more shots because, you know, did or didn't work the COVID one. Well, so what you're basically saying is I'm okay with if I get polio. I'm okay if I get, one of these. That's just dumb.
The thing that I think about all the time is, and even not so much for yourself, but if you're exposing somebody else whose immune system is compromised, or they're a senior, or somebody who really, really is vulnerable, that's a pretty selfish thing that you're doing if you're not protecting your community. And that's my biggest reason. I mean, of course, I don't want to get sick, but I want to make sure that I'm taking care of everybody else as well.
I'm a big believer in modern science, and they eradicated things like we were just talking about. Yeah. And for you to say, well, I don't believe that, that's just silly. That's just dumb.
You can't argue with science, established science.
Even when you and I were little kids, polio was still around, it was crippling people and killing people.
We had all those sugar cubes and the semen vaccines, sock vaccines.
And then one of our presidents lost his ability to walk because of polio.
Right.
So you'll get it done. All right, a couple of other things. The Huntsman World Senior Games coming up.
Yay!
You're in charge of a specific sport, yes?
Yeah, Doug and I are the race directors for the race walking and the power walking events.
Okay, what's the difference between the two?
Okay, so race walking is an Olympic sport. It's very technical. Basically, when your heel strike, you go from heel toe, not landing on the balls of your feet, which is considered running. So you land on your heel. As your foot rolls over and onto your toe, your knee has to remain straight.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds hard.
It is. It takes some practice for sure. And then that has to remain straight as it passes underneath your body until your next heel strike. And that leg has to be straight as well. And there are judges all the way around the track. So we have three different distances. First day is 3,000 meters on the track, which is about 7.5 times around the track. Second day is 1,500 meters, which is about 3.25 times around, or 3.5. And the last one is 5K, which is 1,000 meter loops done 5 times. Wow. And that's on a road behind the Dixie Center. And along the course, we have USA track and field judges. And they are there looking very, very carefully at people's kneecaps.
They're watching.
They are watching. Mm. And if you look like your knee's kind of soft, they'll give you a little yellow, little paddle come out we put out in front of you as sort of a warning. Hey, Marianne, watch your technique. You're getting kind of, you know.
So you get one warning?
You can get three.
Three warnings, okay.
Yeah. And then if you're doing something that's just egregious, like running, or you're just, you know, doing something stupid or being unsportsmanlike, they'll just shove a red paddle in your face and you're supposed to
you're
come
done.
Off.
That's
yeah.
It.
You're supposed to walk off the track wow. at that point. What can happen is that there's a big DQ board out there on the field, on the track. And as you go by, if you see your number on there with check marks, it can be kind of scary. But what can happen is even if you think that you've done a really wonderful race, then all the judges can get together at the end and say, oh, by the way, I noticed that number 24, blah, 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 was doing this or that. And you can still get DQ'd at the end of the race if they saw something.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's always a camera out there at the finish to make sure people aren't running over the finish line. That happens a lot in the last 100 meters. People get excited and start running. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to win. Especially if they're really close to another competitor. Anyway, so that's race walking. Power walking is a very, very much less technical sport. It's basically walk and don't run. Still land on your heels, but it doesn't matter if your knees are bent. You can just, you know, just walk as fast as you can and just propel yourself forward as quickly as you can. And it's a much more inclusive sport.
Now, I seem to remember a rule about 1 foot always has to be touching the ground.
Correct. Yes. If you have both.
Is that in both?
Yes.
Okay.
If you look at Olympic athletes in slow-mo, quite often both their feet are off the ground, which is technically running. But
that's a no-no.
It's what's visible to the human eye.
Okay.
By the judges. And quite often they can't see that.
But obviously, if you see somebody sprinting or running,
yes.
they're off the ground quite a bit during the course of what
yes.
they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
that's pretty obvious to everybody. I've been in places where I've done races that, like, particularly a 5K when you're out on the road for quite a ways and you're spread out, and I'll have people running in between judges, which is just really, really, I think, really, really.
It's kind of unethical, isn't it?
Kind of unethical, yeah. But, you know, eventually karma catches up with them and somebody sees them.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame that people would do that.
Yeah.
The Huntsman World Senior Games, when does it start?
It starts. Basically, the marathon is Saturday, and then on Sunday, all of the senior athletes come in to town. They check into the Dixie Center to get their packets and all their numbers. And
so
all
next week?
Up. Yeah, next week.
That's it.
And then Monday the games start, and they
wow.
go until the 19th.
They have some pretty fun sports. There's mm-hmm. archery, a lot of basketball stuff. Now, I will tell the story one more time of my basketball experience. I got on a really good team. And we were making, it was in the 50, I had just turned 50. I was so excited. I was going to.
Oh, you're a baby senior.
I was going to medal in the Huntsman World Senior Games.
Yeah.
And we had a good team, and we were in the semifinals. And I had no basketball. I had the ball kind of at the elbow there, at the free throw line extended, and grabbed the ball, and I was going to make this great move down the lane and lay it up for uh-huh. a basket. And I took two steps, and my left leg went out from under me completely.
Oh,
now,
man.
Everybody thought I'd blown my knee out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
fortunately, it wasn't that. I say fortunately because it could have been worse. But unfortunately, my left leg went numb on me, and it happened three or four times over the next few months until it just went completely numb. Now I cannot feel my leg from my knee down on my left side, which people that know me say I have a limp. Yes, it's because I can't feel the ground when my foot strikes the ground.
Man.
And second of all, I have to move my lower leg with the muscles in my upper leg because I can't feel my lower leg. And so the team I was on was really good. We got the silver medal.
Still.
In the Huntsman wow. World Senior Games.
Fantastic.
I didn't play in the gold medal game because of my leg
yeah.
situation, but, Larry Bergeson, who was the school
right.
superintendent, I think he made 11 3-pointers for the other team in that gold medal game. And
wow.
he wasn't the only reason that they beat us, but he was a major reason. That they beat us. So, other sports in the Huntsman World Senior Games, bowling, climbing. I'm not familiar with.
That's new this year. There's a climbing wall, and I'm not exactly sure where that. I think it might be at the university.
So I'm curious, maybe you don't even know the answer to this. Is climbing all about time, like how quick can you do this, or is there form involved? Do they have judges that rate them?
I believe it says who can get up the top fastest.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's just like I'm doing, I think I told you last time, I'm doing a four women relay team indoor rowing.
Rowing, that's right.
Rowing machines.
On an actual lake or anything.
No. We're going to be on rowing machines at the Dixie Center. And that's basically, you know, which team can do 2,000 meters the quickest.
Wow.
And, you know, rotating, jumping off the rowing machine.
Now these machines, I know I asked you before, but I forgot. Is there a certain weight the rowing machine will be on, and is it adjustable depending on how big you are?
No, it's basically one weight has to be agreed upon by your team and set at the beginning. You can't adjust it once you get on, once it's your turn.
Because certainly you're going to be the smallest one on your team.
There's actually a woman who's even smaller than I am.
No.
Well, she's taller, but she's very, very, very thin.
Okay, all right.
So, and then there's one gal who's, you know, quite strong. She's a baby senior. She's 50 years old. So she'll probably be our ringer for sure.
Yeah. Also, sports like horseshoes, pickleball, mountain biking, shooting, rugby. Yes, rugby is in it this year, as well as soccer, square dancing, swimming, track and field, volleyball. Volleyball is very competitive. And
extremely.
I noticed, by the way, in the World Senior Games, you know, in volleyball, you can officially hit the ball with your foot.
Yes.
And young kids, you see them diving on the floor. They call them digs, right? Digging the ball out. Mm-hmm. I noticed last time I went and watched them play in the Huntsman World Senior Games. Those guys don't dive,
No. But
they will use their feet to dig the ball out.
They won't get back up if they get down.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Yeah, and but it's kind of fascinating because volleyball becomes
kickball,
a little form of soccer mixed in with it. It's kind of cool.
Pretty fun. Yeah, there are 40-plus sports here. It's pretty. There's something for everybody to watch.
And if you have never seen these horseshoe guys compete for medals, you will be shocked. Horseshoe backyard game, kind of like cornhole. It's one of those games that, you get a few ringers here and there, and you get some points if you're close, things like that. But these guys are hitting like 90%+ of the horseshoes they throw are ringers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's stunning. It's how good they are. Like, they have it down to almost the science. I mean, it's no longer an art form. It is a science how good these guys are. So that's the Huntsman World Senior Games coming up starting next week.
Next Monday.
All right. Yeah. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
A couple of other sports I wanted to throw my support behind with the Huntsman World Senior Games coming up. Number one, softball. I've been out to the softball venue many times, and some of those teams out there are amazing. I mean, way better than I'll ever dream about being. And, you know, some of these guys are 70, 75, and these ladies too.
They're former pros, some of them.
Yeah, they're really, really good players. And then pickleball. I play pickleball two or three times a week. I love playing, but to watch some of these guys that are playing that are, and I say, I don't mean to say they're only guys and girls, but to watch some of these players play, I mean, wow. You know, and maybe they don't move as good as they used to, but they have phenomenal control of where they hit the ball. A couple of other things, non-sports, relating to the Huntsman World Senior Games. I know there's a couple of parties planned.
Yes, the opening ceremonies are Tuesday night, and that is going to be starting at 7 o'clock. But at 5 o'clock, there's a pre-ceremonies party on the east side of Burns Arena, where the ceremonies are. Free pizza for the first 1,000 people who show up.
Free
pizza. And the ceremony is free, and there's that wonderful flag ceremony, and it's just it's always, always really, really inspiring. And then the following week is the concert and celebration, also at the Burns Arena, with one of your favorite bands, Andy. Actually, it's an ABBA tribute band. I think you're maybe not a big ABBA fan, but
I'm not a huge ABBA fan.
I love
that's
them.
Okay.
I love them. So that's free to the public.
It's a personal
also.
Taste thing, right?
I understand. I'm older than you are. So
one of my favorite bands is Def Leppard, and you're probably like, so anyway.
They had the one arm drummer, right?
Yes, he got in a car accident and lost his arm, but he's
amazing.
Still pretty darn good.
Yeah, he was.
And then health screenings, all kinds of health screenings going on. And we were talking about it being Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And one of those screenings is breast cancer screening.
Yeah, there's I think 17 different screenings you can have. These are actually for people who are registered participants and their friends. So those are taking place Wednesday through Friday, 8 to 4, and Saturday, 10 to 2.
Screening for diabetes, glaucoma, cholesterol, bone density, all kinds of stuff.
There's a carotid screening for it. It's an ultrasound on your carotid arteries for blockages.
Because some of us have some plaque building up.
Yeah, and also a PSA test, which is really important for men.
Wow, very cool. All right. right. Marianne, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Andy.
I know you didn't have to, but you did come in, and you opened. I appreciate you being really candid about your breast cancer treatment.
Too. Always happy to talk.
It's the Andy Griffin Show. Tomorrow, Dr. Blodgett will join me here on the air. We'll talk about those vaccines. Get your shots. We'll be back then.